Are side by side with all of you. You know, KKCR is starting its fundraising right now. This is Maka'ala with a personal, private, well, I guess not so private, plea to do what you can. You know, part of what we're hoping for is a resilient Kauai. And one of the keys to resilience in my world is facts, not fears. And to be sure that we have a place that gives us a psychological and emotional break, gives us a loving support, and gives us the facts and doesn't spread the fears. So that's what KKCR is all about. It's a community radio station. They're really rare. I don't know if the people in Kauai realize, but I don't know how many of them are nationally, but they're not that common. They're hard to do. They're expensive to run. The government does not support them. Communities have to support them because they want it, because the community wants to take care of itself. And Kauai is saying right now, we want to take care of ourselves. We think we can. We know we can. I think I can. And one of the keys to that is having good community communications and learning the truth about ourselves, reminding us of our own story. So please go to kkcr.org and click that donate button. You know, $10, $20, $100, please. I know it's tough. It's tough on a lot of us. But some of us are okay. And those of us that are okay have a kuleana. We have a responsibility to take care of each other and ourselves. And this radio station is part of ourselves. It's part of our community. Welcome to Makai Watch. This is our program about the aina, those things that feed us, those things that care for us, those things that we care for. We start today by expressing our hope that you and your ohana are well and safe, and our sympathy and aloha and love to the families of the Kauai folks who have been impacted with this terrible virus. We're very, very sorry for your pain and suffering and for your loss, and we're here to support you in any way that we can. If you need somebody to talk to, you need help, please let folks know. Knock on a door, pick up the phone, and let folks know that you're needing a little help. This is the okay time to do that. We're all in this together, one big boat. And we're grateful, at least I'm grateful. I know it's going to be more difficult for some folks, but I'm very grateful today for the governor's update today that he's extended the opening to September. I think that's wise. There's a lot of good reasons to do that, and I'm grateful that he did it. I know it was a difficult decision to make, and I know it's going to be hard on some of our folks, our business folks, but we got to do what's right to save lives, and that'll save lives. We particularly appreciate our mayor on a continuing basis for standing strong, telling the truth, spreading facts, not fears, and for his sense of humor and his love and his aloha. He sets the tone, and we like it when he sings us a song, and we like it when he giggles a little, and we like it when he's very stern and serious and tells us to behave ourselves. We appreciate the fact that he's in this boat with us at this time. Today, we're going to focus on a true Kauai story, a real Hanalei story, although not just a Hanalei story, but a true Kauai story. And we've asked a young woman to come in to the studio and be with me today. And I want you folks to remember that that can't be an easy thing to do, right? Am I a little scary? Maybe. We asked her to come in because she's been studying one of these birds. And we wanted to get, again, facts, not fears. We want to just talk about the science, and we want to talk about the critter that she spent a long time studying. But first, we're going to introduce her to you. And if you have questions, the number here is 826-7771. Maybe I should charge per question. If you're going to ask a question, you gotta pay the piper to ask the question. Nah. But it would be nice if you call, if you had two reasons to call. You call because you have a question or a comment or a story of your own. And you're going to give the station a little support. That would be really cool. Okay. So, if you are paying attention to the world out there, especially the world in Hanalei, one of the things we know is there are birds. And there's birds for several reasons. One, there always were birds. Two, it's a safe place for birds, or it's supposed to be. We're trying hard to keep it a safe place for birds. And this young woman works mostly in Hanalei to study a particular bird that many of you know a story about. You know the story about this bird, and if you do, maybe this will turn you on and get you to call in with your stories about this bird. But first of all, I want to find out a little bit about her, because that's how we roll. So I want to welcome Bryn Weber to the show and say thank you for having the nerve, the gumption, and for finding the little studio in the jungle. It's always an achievement.
Yeah, thank you.
You're very welcome. So, first of all, Bryn, you weren't born here, so where did you come from?
Thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. I'm originally from Wisconsin, actually. I grew up there, and I attended UW Stevens Point for my undergrad. And I graduated in 2015 with my degree in wildlife ecology, actually.
The bigger picture.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you narrowed it.
Yeah, and so from there, that's where I developed this interest in ornithology, you know, the study of birds, and actually Hawaiian conservation, too. I think I had a professor there who had a slide on Kauai Forest Bird Recovery Project, and I just thought it was so fascinating, the work they were doing, doing this captive rearing of critically endangered birds. And I think from there, I just started to do all this research on Kauai and all these endangered birds that are here on this island. So that's when I first kind of got the seed planted that I would maybe someday try to work out here. But then, yeah, after that, I went into the field, worked in Arizona and California mostly for about 2 years. I worked, I studied yellow-billed cuckoos, actually.
Oh!
In the desert.
Does he say cuckoo?
Yeah, they do. They do, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cuckoo.
Uh-huh. And then I also studied desert bighorn sheep, too, in Arizona.
Oh, well, boy.
As well.
There's two different critters.
Yeah, yeah. But then I got back into birds, and that whole time, basically, I was applying to jobs in Hawaii. it's very hard to get in here. In 2016, I had an interview, actually, with the biologist at Hanalei, Yeah, I came
and
over.
It worked.
Yeah, it worked. It all worked out. I put everything, you know, sold everything, sold my car, moved over here, and I've pretty much been here ever since.
What people do for science, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And how do you pay yourself?
How do I pay myself?
How do you make money? How do you pay your rent?
Someone told me the other day that biologists,
typically
get paid in sunsets.
Yes.
Helicopter rides in sunsets.
Yes, yes. No. Probably. Yeah, helicopter rides for sure.
Yeah. But I'm a master's student now, so I do operate on a, you know, small monthly stipend.
Yeah.
I worked at Hanalei as a kupu
intern.
Yes.
You go.
Those of you
that live in Hawaii, that's a very fairly large intern program, and very successful, and many of the nonprofits, including mine, over the years have had kupu interns, and many of them have come back. They have, like you, they've now got a job, and now they're doing, you know, something else. So it's very, very cool. It's a good program. What does kupu stand for?
It's actually doesn't stand for anything. It's the fern, actually, which is the first fern
there
that grows on the lava flows. So it's kind of this representation of growth.
There you go.
Right. And they do tons of work in conservation. So
yes.
The program I was a part of was the year-long conservation leadership development program. And I was there at Hanalei and Kilauea Point. I did avian monitoring work, so I was doing Nene nest monitoring, albatross monitoring, and I had a small pilot project studying nests of this endangered water bird that I'm going to be talking more about today. Yeah.
Wow, too cool.
Yeah.
I had a kupu intern once that really wanted to be in the forest, and I wasn't working in the forest. I was doing all ocean-related stuff. And for years, she was, I just really want to get back up in the woods. Then she met a boy who was working in the ocean and suddenly flipped. Now she's she's a really good marine scientist, but it's just a funny story. But, you never know what's going to change your focus.
Yeah.
So how did you decide? So let's talk about the bird you're studying now, mm-hmm. you're working with now.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the name of the bird?
It has many names. Okay. The name I prefer to use is Ala'ula because mm-hmm. it's the Hawaiian name and it is the most eloquent. The other names are Hawaiian gallinule. That's the, scientific name is actually Hawaiian common gallinule. They were previously called Hawaiian moorhen, but that changed in 2011 taxonomy. It's very confusing.
Sometimes two men in a closet get together with a cigar and decide to change the names of everything.
Yes, exactly. But I call them the Ala'ula.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And ula, for those of you who don't know Hawaiian, means red. And so what's the deal with the red?
Yeah, so the Ala'ula is said to be the bringer of fire to Hawaii. And I have a story that I brought. I don't know if we have time for it, but we might as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
This is from a very old book that my friend sent me this story the other day. It's actually from Ferns and Flowering Plants of Hawaii National Park by Otto DeGener.
And somehow a bird got in it.
Yeah, and somehow this story of the Ala'ula got in. So the discovery of this method of making fire is legendary. Maui and Hina had four sons, Maui Mua, Maui Hope, Maui Kikui, and Maui Okalana. One morning at sunrise, the four brothers launched their canoe from the beach near their home below Kaupo Gap at the base of Haleakala and proceeded to the fishing grounds. They were just beginning to fish when Maui Okalana saw a fire on the beach that they had just left. They turned their canoe around towards the shore and hastened to investigate. Upon landing, Maui Mua ran towards the spot where the fire had been burning. The curly-tailed alai, or mud hens, who had built the fire to roast some bananas they had stolen from the brothers, scratched out the flames and flew away. Maui Mua returned to his brothers and told him what he had seen. They decided not to go fishing again, but to wait for the next appearance of the fire. They waited so many days in vain that they finally resolved to go fishing again. No sooner had they left the fishing grounds when the fire appeared. As soon as they returned, it was extinguished. This happened repeatedly. The Ala'ula always knows when the brothers had gone fishing. They could tell by counting the number of men in the canoe when one of the brothers remained behind to discover the method of making fire, and they consequently refrained from making it. The four brothers finally outwitted the Ala'ula by dressing up a calabash in kapa and setting it in the Maui Mua's place in the canoe. Maui Mua then secreted himself on shore while the three brothers set out for the fishing grounds as usual. The unsuspecting Ala'ula believed that he had the shore to themselves, built their fire. Maui Mua crept close to the birds and then suddenly ran forth and seized one, threatening to kill it as if the secret of making fire were not disclosed. The Ala'ula attempted to lead him astray by telling him to rub different substances, none of which could produce fire. Maui Mua, after trying these without success, finally forced the bird to part with her knowledge. And revenge for the Ala'ula's conduct in inducing him to rub the Murray things, Maui Mua rubbed the top of the bird's head until it was red with blood. The mark remains to this day as evidence, as it said, of Maui Mua's exploit.
There you go. So now you know how to see the little bird. He's got a red area right above at the top of his beak and on the really on the top of his head. It's really on the top of his beak.
Kind of like a shield.
Yeah. It's between his eyes, right?
Yeah.
So we see these birds kind of all over. I mean, we see them. They want a damp place, right?
Yeah.
Where do they want to live?
Yeah, so they're a wetland-dependent bird. So they rely on freshwater wetlands for the most part. So you'll see them around golf courses, in wetlands, in taro farms, and other agricultural, ponds as well.
So why is it important for you to be studying them? I mean, what is it? We know the bird. We know his name. We know where he lives.
Right.
What else do we need to know?
Yeah, so the Ala'ula is actually endangered.
How come?
There are so many threats to this species. In the past, of course, there was over-exploitation. and of this bird. And
were people eating them?
Yeah, there was hunting, definitely.
Not very big.
A very long time ago. Yeah, they're smaller than a chicken, actually.
Yeah,
so they're
not much of a meal. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. There was, you know, we have introduced predators.
Here we go, folks.
Here we go.
So those of you that have heard this show before, it's that nasty C word. It's the cat.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and these are also birds that don't have a natural defense. They don't know geologically, you know, evolutionarily, they didn't have predators like that. So when we brought things like dogs and cats into the picture, and even wild pigs, because when the Polynesians had pigs, they did not let them go crazy wild all over the land. They wanted to know where their dinner was, so they kept them in contained areas. They weren't just running around. So this bird sees something like that coming at him. He has no clue that it's not a good thing and that they might be looking at him like he's dinner. So how big of a bird is this? This is a 2-pound bird, 3-pound bird?
It's a rather small bird. Like I said, smaller than a chicken, slightly smaller than a duck, like the Kalua duck. Some of you might know that bird.
And they have webbed feet?
They actually don't. They have really long, slender toes.
And how does that work in water?
Well, they're a wading bird, right?
Okay. So they're walking, not swimming.
Yeah, they're going to walk. So they require a certain, you know, level of water. They kind of like a more medium depth rather
which is,
than...
Which is what, 8 inches?
Yeah, 4 to 8 inches maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
So one of the stories we like to tell in Honolulu when people say, oh, no, I'm preserving this habitat for the water birds. These are birds that don't dive 4 feet down, folks. These are birds that want to walk in the water more like a mud puddle than anything else. Okay, and what are they eating when they're there?
They eat invertebrates and other, you know, vegetation. I think most of their diet is invertebrates. I've seen them bring snails to the nest and various other things, but also dragonflies. But yeah, mostly very small invertebrates.
Little critters.
Also some vegetation as well.
They do.
Plants, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I've seen them. We have some wonderful pictures by a friend of mine, Hob Osterlund, of a mama, Alaiula. Matter of fact, it's a rather famous photo because we spread it all over social media every day, of a mama teaching her little ones how to eat the long green, I don't know, it's some form of seaweed or sea grass or something. It's a wonderful picture, but it's also the story of how they learn what to eat and how to eat and so forth. How many eggs do they lay at one time? Is there a...
Yeah, so the typical clutch size is like 3 to 6 eggs.
So not very many.
Yeah, yeah. This species, one of the things we don't know, you know, like you said,
back to her job.
We know, we don't know a ton about Hawaiian gallinule. And one of the things we don't know is to what extent there's cooperative breeding going on. So maybe 2 females with 1 male. And so sometimes we'll actually see a nest that has, like right now I'm monitoring a nest that has 10 eggs, actually.
But you don't know if it's from one mommy or 2.
No, we don't, because the sexes, they look the same. The mom and the dad look the same. So we can't really tell if there's 2 females there or 1.
Well, that's confusing.
Yeah, and ornithology.
Do you tag them? Do you band them?
That's something that we're looking at. Yeah, yes.
I would think it'd be important to know who you're looking at.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we could get to that later, but yeah, that's actually part of my research project is capturing and banding, yes.
And how to, kind of? Doing some?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And actually working with transmitters as well to be able to track where they go.
Oh, this will be terrific.
Yeah, yeah.
So do you study them at night, too, or just in the daytime?
So far, it's just during the daytime, but once we have transmitters on some of the adults, we should be able to do some nighttime work. Although from the past researcher who worked on Kalua duck, he did some nighttime work and he kind of discovered that the ducks and nene are kind of moving around at night, but the Alaiula is they pretty much go to bed at about 7, you know, when the sun goes down, they hunker down in one spot.
There you go. Okay. Well, at least he was looking at them while he was supposed to be looking at the others.
Yes,
that's good.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so what is it that you, if you're just tuning in, Laura has to remind me every time. Like I go on and on and on, and people turn on the radio in their car and go, what is she talking about? This is Makala, this is Makai Watch, and we're talking with Bryn Weber today, who's studying the Alaiula, one of the important and endangered water birds on Kauai. But elsewhere, too. They live on Oahu?
Yep, just Oahu. They used to be on all of the islands, except for...
And now they're on Oahu and Kauai.
Yep,
it's getting worse,
it.
Folks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And actually, about 75% of the population is on...
So, yeah. Again, another Kauai Noah's Ark.
Yeah.
We talk a lot about how Kauai is the Noah's Ark. And one reason that we are is because we don't have too many of the mongoose, but we do have those crazy cats.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So when you do your monitoring, you'll get some footage, too, of the cat predation.
Yes. So, actually, in 2017, when I was part of the Kupu program, I did a pilot project looking at trail cameras to see if these trail cameras could be a good way to monitor nests for the species, you know, if they would be affected by the cameras or not. But we actually did capture cat depredations on the nest. We had four depredations, and we actually think that one was a repeat offender, like the same cat on two different
nests.
They
do learn. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know that.
Is the depredation a death?
Yeah, so I just kind of use that as like a term for an event. So we had the cameras monitoring the nest, and they're set on a time, a motion trigger. So we had four different nests where the nest completely failed because of this cat depredation. And
So the cat ate all the babies, too.
The cat actually is going after the adult, of course. It's sitting there, sitting tight on the eggs. But when one adult is lost from a nest, they're probably going to...
Oh, then the babies die.
It's just a huge disturbance, and they're going to abandon the nest, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the same thing as a permanent take, right?
Yes.
Gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are they also killed by cars on the road?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, that was something I was just looking at before we came in here today. We do have vehicle strikes. That's definitely something at Hanalei, you know, with all of this. We have Ohiki Road, which is this kind of main road that goes down towards the trailhead. And I have just kind of always notice people driving really quickly through there, but the speed limit is 15 miles an hour, and we really encourage people to look out as they're driving, because there are five endangered water birds at Hanalei National Wildlife Refuge, and every single one is contributing to the recovery of their species. So
right, everyone is precious because we don't have too many more left. And the Alaiula you will see also. You'll see a little bit around the island, but you'll see in Kilauea, any place where there's water. But they always want to walk from the drainage way, the culvert, over the road. If they found themselves there, I don't know why they don't want to go back through the culvert, but they don't. They want to go faster back wherever it is they're going. And so we do see them on the roads.
Yeah.
And thankfully they've got a little splash of red and you kind of see them, but nonetheless they kind of come out of nowhere. So you have to be, we have to be aware that. So what does endangered mean for the Alaiula? How many do we think there are?
Yeah, so this is it's kind of a tricky topic to talk about because they're so hard to survey for, right? They're kind of known to be pretty secretive. And in a lot of places, the vegetation is very dense. So when you're trying to come up with these estimates, that's really what it is an estimate. So numbers from 2015, when they do their biannual water bird surveys, were looking at about 800 individuals.
Oh, wow.
But that was a count. So I think personally that that's a low number. But
you could extrapolate that out, even if it was double that, that's a very low number.
Right, right. And just going back to Hanalei Refuge, you know, it's such an important place for these birds. They estimate that actually 40% of all of the Alaiula, you know, in the world are at Hanalei right here. That's kind of why I'm here doing this project.
And then, and why you're here today, because you're here, you're in, you know, Hanalei studying the birds that are there.
Yeah.
So for those of us that live on Kauai or who have visited Kauai in the past, not today, the Hanalei is kind of a center point of what we're calling Kauai's Noah's Ark. Other places on Kauai are creating this Noah's Ark. We as people didn't come up with that. We didn't design, you know, that. What happened was the birds showed up and we went, oh, you need to live here. Oh, you can't live there anymore because there's mongoose or there's loss of habitat or there's whatever. So you decided, because this is what happened. We did not go out and capture a whole bunch of Alaiula and bring them into Hanalei. That's not how it worked. It is how it worked with the Nene, but they brought themselves to a place and we just needed to listen. We just needed to notice. And what you're doing is part of that noticing. You're saying, okay, you guys are here. You're in trouble. You're here because you think this is a safe place. And now I'm going to, this is what I think you're doing. And now I'm going to try to find out as much about you as I can in order to make this A, a safer place, and B, make more of you. And then hopefully you spread around and become more someplace else. That's not the only bird, obviously. The one story that we know, the seabird stories are sadder and more compelling in many ways. The Alaiula has a couple of things about it that make it a less common story. One is they're secretive, they're shy, they stay to themselves, they're not necessarily in our backyards. And two, they're small. They're not, you know, they're not the nene, they're not the goose, they're not, you know. But they share the habitats. They live all together with all the other water birds without conflict.
Yeah. I mean, well, there is some conflict. They are territorial, so they are kind of
don't mess with
the
my
top
nest.
Dogs out there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they actually chase around all of the other water birds.
Really?
Usually the alae are the winners. They'll get in fights, actually, with the Hawaiian coot. Yes, it's actually quite a sight to see. I've seen two families actually come together and fight over a territory. There's like jumping in the air, and all the chicks are on either side, kind of egging on the parents.
Yeah. rooting, taking bets.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So, but in general, they exist peacefully, you know.
Sorta.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
interesting.
All are the top dogs.
But the way the environment works, the ecology works, is that there is a niche for each one of them if they just pretend, if they just remember and stay there, right?
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So Bryn Weber is studying these birds because there's very few of them left, and because we have a safe place for them to live and a safe place for her to work in Hanalei. And because what are you going to do when you learn a whole lot about this bird? You're just going to study this bird for the rest of your life?
You mentioned that word niche, right?
Yeah.
And that kind of made me think of just the different habitat requirements for all of these different species.
Yeah.
So that is really what kind of the emphasis of my project is looking at, is habitat and how that affects reproductive success. So by that, I mean eggs hatching from a nest. That we call nest success, and then we also have brood success, which is just chicks surviving to fledging. So they're independent from their parents at about 40 days. So I'm studying both of those phases.
Do they move out on their own, or are they booted?
Well, that's another one of these things that, we need to get color bands and identifiers on these birds and transmitters.
Yeah, because first of all, we don't know who's who.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so those are kind of my two main research questions, is looking at the reproductive success of this species across the whole refuge. One thing that's really great is that Hanalei has worked to improve their managed wetlands over the years. And more they have this, you know, this huge managed wetland complex, actually, that's out of sight of everyone. So no one can really appreciate it, but it's there.
They also don't bother it.
Yeah. I guarantee you it's there. I spend most of my time back there. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, no one's ever, it takes a lot of time and resources to search for nests. So it's something that no one has really looked at yet with this bird, is to go out and look for these nests in the managed wetlands. They're easy to find in the taro lo'i. They kind of just, you know, pop out at you, or they're even right on the dike sometimes. But the managed wetlands, they're really hidden. And so that's a big part of my everyday, is just walking 10-meter transects across, you know, wetlands.
You sing to yourself? I mean, I'd find myself.
I have a technician now, so we get to.
Oh,
yeah,
you can talk.
Yeah, I know. After all these COVID restrictions are lifted, I was finally able to hire someone. So
this is a really good time for me to say that there is a new group that has been formed called Friends of Hanalei Refuge. And I'm involved. And we formed that group in order to provide a community connection to these birds, because what Bryn is talking about is a closed refuge. You cannot just go wandering around, because obviously you would be disturbing the birds, and they're endangered and in trouble, and we want to give them as much peace and quiet as we can to do their natural thing. So we formed Friends of Hanalei Refuge, and once we're past this pandemic, One of the things that we will do is organize activities for small community groups to go and visit where Bryn is working, to go into the managed wetlands, which you can't get to unless you go with us. So it's kind of a cool thing. We're not trying to, you know, be a big fancy deal or make $1 million, but we do want to restore that connection between the community and the birds, because these are our birds and we don't know them very well. And there's several reasons we don't know them very well, but one is that the refuge is closed for their protection. So unless you have one living in your backyard, which is, you know, happens but is not common, you wouldn't have any relationship with them like we do with the chickens. So Friends of Honolulu Refuge is up and running, and we will be doing some of those trips and tours and give opportunities when we're past all of this. And Bryn will be one of the people that we will ask to help us and to go with and tell people about the work she's doing and why she's doing it. And so in the meantime, we did this. We did the radio show to give you chance to at least chat a little bit about the bird. And do we have an intermission song? We're going to take a little break. And if folks have questions or comments, 826-7771, we're going to take a bit of a break and we'll be right back.
Mana ai, mahalo for the pa'i ai. In a time when a culture could die, if you take away the water, our precious vaivai. O mana ai, mahalo for the pa'i ai. In a time when a people could cry, 'cause they're abusing the aina, aole malama. So let's not feed our hunger with greed. It's time we plant the seed and remember true Hawaii, Kanaka Maoli. Don't let it die. Don't say that we didn't try to break on through the lies. I look into the inside, a kua gaidai. Like opelu in the sea, a school we must be. Planting kalo to feed our family. Singing our songs to help each other along. Keiki o ka aina, stand strong. Well, we can talk about sustainability, but most of this land is leased to companies who could care less about the people and the land they grow upon. Just becomes a chemical farm. They're doing harm. And what have these companies done for us anyway? Most of the food they grow just gets sent away to another place. Then they say it to our face. If we didn't have them, we'd starve in just a few days. But our way, we are here to make our stand today. And it knows a lot of people out there who feel the same way. Don't let them trick you, they're out to deceive. But everyone's entitled to what they believe. So I'll be chanting mana ai, mahalo for the pa'i ai. In a time when we look through the lies, stared them in the eyes and told them that this truth wears no disguise. And like Opelu in the sea, a school we must be. Planting kalo to feed our family, singing our song to help each other along. Keiki o ka aina, stand strong, stand strong. Like Opelu in the sea, a school we must be. Planting kalo to feed our family, singing our song to help each other along. Keiki o ka aina, stand strong. Keiki o ka aina, keiki o ka aina, stand strong. Children of the land, keiki o ka aina, stand strong.
Aloha. Welcome back to Makai Watch. I wish you could see the dance goes on in the studio. Laura says, okay, are you ready? What means take, you don't even have time to take breath. we're talking today with Bryn Weber, who is studying the Alai Ula. Anybody remembers why it's called that? What's Ula? Ula's red, got a red head. Yep, that's the bird. Not a very big bird, but in trouble because of things catching and eating it, and trouble because people caught it and ate it, I guess. Easy to catch in a way. Can fly.
Yes, yeah. They'd rather run, though. That's more of their thing.
Well, with those big long toes, they probably have a stride, right?
Yeah.
And I've seen them on the, sometimes it almost looks like they're walking on water. They're not. There's something under the water, just under the water that they're standing on.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have webbed feet. They've got these big, long toes.
Yeah. They really like floating vegetation, too, you know.
So stand on that and play with that.
Yeah.
I've seen them on like a lily pond leaf stuff.
We don't have many of those here, you know, ponds like that on Kauai.
No.
But rather we have Kalo. And, Hanalei is super unique in that it has all of this habitat for endangered water birds. And a lot of it is in the Tarolo'i.
And it wasn't always thus, folks. There was a time right after the refuge was formed when there were many folks who were not sure that the kalo and the birds were going to be compatible. And it was a bit of a fight. It was a bit of a battle. And it was actually kind of interesting because it was one scientist on one side and one scientist on the other. And as a community, we just sort of stood back and went, what are you talking about? Birds have lived there all this time. You guys are fight with each other. But one scientist did his bird counts by standing up on the Hanalei Valley overlook and looking down into the valley.
Yep.
And he said to me, there's no birds down there.
Yeah. Okay.
And we said, that's because they're under the leaves. And he did. He published it. I mean, he really went for it.
Yeah,
if I
remember
ever
reading
see
about
that
this,
guy again, I doubt
this.
He's still on the earth. But
yes, you got to get out there. You got to get your toes in the mud.
He was most annoying. But we straightened him out. Actually, we chased him out of town and said, you know, you need to go study someplace else. Because you clearly don't get that we're not fighting about the birds and the cow. Only you guys are. So, okay, we need to know if they're a boy or a girl, because we don't now. We need to know their behavior, if two females are sharing, because you think they are sharing a nest. Boy, that just is good efficiency, right?
I mean, why
build two when you can have one?
Right. And sometimes we have this really fancy term in ornithology. It's called egg dumping, where one female will actually come along and...
So technical.
Yes, so technical. She'll dump her eggs in another nest. And that way,
and then go off and
then
play.
Leave them.
She's off to the
single spot. Don't really know which is going on because we don't have identifiers on these birds, and the male and the female look alike. So that's another side of my project that I'm really hoping.
Why do they do that?
To work towards, and because,
so do they sit on the egg?
Yeah,
oh,
yes.
They do. Okay.
So their nests are really interesting. They nest right down in the kalo, and it's incredible.
But they're dry. They're not wet.
No, just right above the kalo, and so. What I do when I find a nest is I measure kind of everything in that general area. I measure vegetation height. I measure water depth, all the different plant species that are in, 1 meter around that nest. We also do some, more large scale habitat characteristics. But generally, I'm looking at the habitat right next to that nest. And then we'll be comparing that to the nest success of if the nest hatches or not, how many chicks hatch. I have cameras up on these nests, and we're recording very interesting footage.
There's just no privacy for these birds.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry, not while I'm around.
I'm still stuck on we don't know if it's a boy or a girl.
Yeah.
I don't know a more basic place to start, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's not like one has a little white feather to give you a clue.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the next step for my project is I'm looking at chick survival. So one way that biologists have been able to study this in other birds like grouse or sage grouse is they will actually capture the adults and then put a transmitter on them. It's actually a radio transmitter, and we're not trying to use any of the more new age technology that have some very fancy transmitters these days. But for this species, you can, since they have such a very small territory, we'll be able to just track them in that small territory with this radio transmitter.
Oh, interesting.
And that way we'll be able to count chicks and determine survival. Yeah, we're looking at following these families until the chicks are about 40 days old when they can be independent from their parents.
Because they're staying endangered. So something other than cats. I mean, cats are a problem, but something's getting them,
and
right?
It's going to be harder to determine the reasons for chick mortality than it is the reasons for the nest and the egg failure because we have the cameras on the nest. But we will be able to get at this brood survival, which is something that there's actually been a ton of work on Oahu with this species, but they haven't really been able to look at brood survival just because it is so hard to follow them around, without transmitters. And they all look the same. You know, they have done some color banding work on Oahu, so we're excited to get that up and running here. We just need this little coronavirus to go away.
Yeah, it's stopping some good stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways, I'm guessing that it's allowing your work to be done sort of unhindered in some ways.
Right.
But on the other hand, you need all those extended arms of science to support you and help you out.
We have we have our endangered species capture and banding permit now, and now it's just coming down to...
That's a biggie.
It's just coming down to getting the correct personnel over here to get me started and get me running. So,
teach you how to do it with that.
So the kicker
with banding birds, even big birds, any bird, is it's so easy to hurt them while you're doing it. And so the permits that are issued by the feds by the federal government to allow a person to band a bird is a big deal. They're not easy to get, and they're they're time consuming. And then when we have somebody that is qualified, we tend to fly them around because they have the skill, because the last thing you want to be doing is hurting birds while you're trying to protect birds.
Exactly.
So it can be really tricky. One of the things I want to get to before we get any further down the path here is what can people do to help protect the bird? I mean, I'm listening to you now talk about the work you're doing, and we're grateful that you're here and glad that, the work can go on. But what can the average person do to help these birds?
I've been thinking about that, and at first I was like, and then eventually I came up with a pretty long laundry list for everyone.
Okay, let's do that.
Yeah, so at the top of my list is to please keep your cats indoors. we've already talked about this a little bit today, but hear us talking earlier, we were talking about how there are no native no native predators to the species.
So the bird doesn't recognize a dangerous situation.
No.
They just don't. They stand there and go, oh, hi, kitty.
And they barely even fly. They more like run around. So
easy prey.
Yeah. So they're definitely, we find the most, out of any of the species, Ala Ula are hit the hardest by cats. Based on the botulism surveys that they have going on in the refuge. We find a lot of cat kills and also barn owl kills as well.
So I want to just for just a second say that some of the cats that, well, all of the cats that are killing these birds in the Hanalei Refuge are feral cats. These are not people's pets, but they are being fed. I want you folks to get this. They're not hunting because they're hungry. They're hunting because they're cats. So these are cats that are fed. We know this. They have ear chips. Somebody's feeding them. And then they walk down to the refuge. We can see the trail. I'm not making this up. And then they kill the birds. And oftentimes they don't eat the bird. They just kill the bird. And there's been enough research now that we know what a cat kill looks like. So somebody says to me, how do you know it was a cat? we know it was a cat. A cat kills in a very specific way. And if you need more information on that, please get a hold of me. And I can, Prince showing me yucky pictures of dead birds.
Two.
But this is a fact. This is not a theory. This is a fact. We know a cat kill from a pig kill, from a dog kill, from another bird kill. Each animal, each predator has its own habit, its mm-hmm. own way. And so, yes, we know. So, again, cats that are killing these birds that are in trouble are fed cats. These mm-hmm. are not skinny, scrawny. I mean, we've got pictures. They're not mm-hmm. starving.
Yes.
Anyway, okay, that's my cat pitch.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so that's something people can do.
That's number
Keep
one on the list.
Cats inside.
Number two is closely related and requires less explanation, and that's just to keep your dogs on a leash.
Yes.
You know, if you're anywhere in Hanalei, anywhere near any wetland at all, you're going to be near endangered water birds. And
period. Yeah. Anywhere in Hanalei.
Uh-huh. Anywhere. And Kilauea, too, you know, we have problems with dogs in Kilauea.
Yes, we've had some terrible kills.
Shearwater colonies, and we don't even need to get started, but it's a very basic thing. So keep your
dogs
dog
on a leash, cat mm-hmm. inside.
Exactly.
Okay.
And number three, we've already talked about this a little bit, but just please drive slow when you're mm-hmm. at Hanalei Refuge. Ohiki Road, I know there's a trailhead up there. It's really popular. And, you know, there's a lot of fishing, hunting opportunities, but please just drive slow when you're on that road. The speed limit is 15 miles an hour. And some
and
of these,
it should be five.
It should be, yeah. And if you see a bird, please slow down, wait for it to pass. I was just looking at some data today, and there's actually been 55 vehicle strikes since 2018 on endangered water birds.
And there's just no reason.
Yeah, most of those
Where
were nene.
Where are you going if you're in a hurry? I mean,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, most of those were nene in and around Hanalei Refuge. But there was actually 28 of those were Alaiula on Hanalei Refuge since 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not including maybe one from last month. So
one thing that I know, you're driving down the road and the Alaiula is standing there, they don't scurry out of the way necessarily.
No.
It's your job to slow down and stop. They're looking at you like, huh, what's that?
Yeah, exactly. Next one is just, you know, Malama Aina, be a good steward of the land. Plant native vegetation. And if you're lucky enough to have a freshwater system in your backyard, you could plant kalo, you know. That's a huge undertaking.
And they will come.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. My last one is just get involved in conservation. Ask around for volunteer opportunities. Teach your kids when they're young, you know, about these concepts of conservation and endemic species and endangered species and how lucky we really are to have the birds that we still have.
And how fortunate we are that we have a place in Hanalei that is saved for them. It's not always as safe as we want it to be, but it is saved for them.
Yeah.
It's bought for them.
Mm-hmm.
That refuge land was purchased for the birds.
Yeah.
And, you know, people with a whole lot more foresight than I'll ever have realized that they were going to need a home and they were going to need a place that they could survive in, that they could thrive in.
Exactly.
We still need to know the boys from the girls, though.
We'll figure that out soon.
You know,
I'll let you know.
At least with the Nene, I can tell because they mm-hmm. have a band. And
But
I can't imagine banding those skinny little legs.
Yeah,
it's
we are hoping to.
Challenge.
We might be able to do some banding at the end of this summer just to kind of get some of our capture and, you know, trapping techniques down for next year when we're going to be doing a lot more of this.
Cool.
Work. So, but so, I did want to say too that, you know, shameless ploy that I am looking for a couple more volunteers to help me with photo review. If you're interested in looking at nest photos, thousands and thousands.
Oh dear.
I have a couple of really awesome volunteers who have been working, helping me for a long time.
That sounds like fun though.
It is fun until you get to about
100,000.
No, but it is really interesting to look into these birds' lives, you know, and be able to scroll through photos and see the chicks hatch and such. Yeah.
So you need somebody to come and sit and look at pictures.
It's actually very, COVID friendly. I can mail you a USB drive, actually. And
wow.
Yeah, you can, contribute a little bit.
Come on, folks. Some of you collecting unemployment. This is a cool
gig.
And you can make a real difference here.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even think about asking you for help ideas. Yeah. That's a yeah. wonderful idea.
Yeah, so you can email me. My email is Bryn Weber at, well, it's Bryn, B-R-Y-N, dot Weber, W-E-B-B-E-R, at OregonState.edu.
And it's Oregon State because?
Because that is where I'm a master's student.
See how it works, folks?
Yes.
And the Oregon connection continues.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a great opportunity.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad you remembered to say that. Okay, and before we're completely out of time, anything else that you want to say that we did not talk about?
Not really.
Goes fast, huh?
Well, yeah, it goes really fast, yeah. Yeah, I just kind of like to reiterate that I'm a master's student at Oregon State University, and I work at Hanalei. I collect my data there, but I'm in no way affiliated. You know, I'm not Fish and Wildlife staff member. So
she doesn't have a uniform.
I speak for myself and mm-hmm. for, you know,
there
as
you
a
go.
Researcher at Oregon State. The last thing that very important that I'd love to say is that I'm just so appreciative and thankful of the taro farmers of Hanalei
oh, for sure.
of letting me work with them and, you know, mess around in their low-E and just help me out, like, on a daily basis. And
they're probably pointing nest.
Yes, exactly. It's so amazing. It's incredible. It's really a privilege
well,
to
the
work
birds
there.
Couldn't do it without them, and you
exactly.
couldn't do it without them. And,
yeah.
And we, you know, that.
Yeah.
They're appreciative of the fact mm-hmm. that they're part of the ecosystem,
yeah.
too. This is a cultural
mm-hmm.
landscape.
Right.
I have two pieces. Thank you so
yeah.
much, Bryn. That was fun.
Yeah.
I told you. People freak out. I can't talk for an hour. They forget that I can, of course. But the but it really goes by fast.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you.
Yeah,
let's
thanks
do
for
your,
having
let's
me.
Let's do your email one more time. So it's Bryn dot Webber at OregonState.edu.
Exactly.
Got it? So help her out. Let her
yeah.
send you a USB and look at pictures of birds and nests for a long
yeah.
time. And but you can make a difference, and
yeah.
then that frees her to do some of the on-the-ground stuff
mm-hmm.
that you... Okay, so KKCR has asked me also to remind folks that on Thursday, July 16th, from 6 to 8:30 p.m., they will be broadcasting the Council Candidate Forum. So we know we need a council candidate for them. And this is your chance. You know, we're not going to do the live stuff anymore, folks. We have to do the online stuff. I hope some of you saw some of the, you know, there's some other stuff around the country going on. And it's actually, it can be done well. It can be done kind of intimately. I like the way the Honolulu mayor's one went, where it's sort of a job interview, and it's kind of cool. It's like have a cup of coffee with a candidate. It was cool. They gave each of them 15 minutes, which was enough time to get in or out of trouble, depending upon how you talked. I also want to say that the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary is doing a webinar on Friday, August 7th. It seems like it's a bit out, but my show will be after that. So Friday, August 7th at noon Hawaii time. And that is Charles Littman talking about the Hawaiian monk seals and major threats to the monk seals. He's going to give us an update. That's part of the Kauai Ocean Discovery First Friday Speaker Series that's now online. You can Google it. Pre-registration is required, and you can call Jean Souza at 651-1457. She works with the sanctuary, and she will hook you up. For me and Makai Watch, I don't have too much else to say. I did my whole cat pitch kind of ad nauseum this time. Do want to remind you that if you are moored in Hanalei Bay, you don't get to use the pier. Stop it. It's not for you. It's for us. It's not a mooring pier. It's a fishing pier. It's a playing pier. Hawaii Revised Statutes does not allow you to use that pier. So it's not for you. And to thank the National Guard, the Hawaii Air National Guard. They are there every single day monitoring the boats that come in and go out of the bay. They're keeping a log. They're communicating with the state. And they are watching you. So, you know what? If you don't know how to act in Hanalei, go someplace else, please. We love you all. We're thankful that you're with us. And please donate if you can. This is a very important time for the community to take care of each other, and KKCR is critical to our community. Mahalo and aloha, Laura Christine, for running the board.
Maybe it's trouble and sorrow, but we'll travel the road, sharing our load.
advice.